Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in. So excited to have Ryan Kipping on the podcast. I've been following her for a while now, and she has some great information. She's a clinically trained registered dietitian nutritionist, author of the Feel Good Pregnancy Cookbook, and master online nutrition educator. Her mission is to ensure every soon-to-be mama is confident in their ability to properly nourish a growing baby through a realistic nutrition approach. Ryan created the Prenatal Nutrition Library app to help people escape the era of information overwhelm and find peace with their daily food choices. You can find her daily content via at Prenatal Nutritionist on both Instagram and TikTok. So go follow her now and tune in for this podcast. Ryan, thank you so much for being here. We're really excited to dive in. Well, me in particular, being in the stage of life that I'm in. But I think this is such a highly needed topic because even we were with some friends and she hasn't been pregnant for a while. And she's like, oh, we were going to buy this, but then we didn't because you're pregnant. And I was like, actually, that would have been fine, you know? So there's so many, I think, misconceptions still out in the world based on what we've been told throughout the years. So getting back into what really matters and what are some of the myths, what do people need to know, I think is really important when it comes to nutrition, especially around pregnancy. So anyways, thank you for being here.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to have this conversation.
So we love talking nutrition on the podcast with people because, I mean, I think even more so than with fitness or movement or the body, there's so much out there. There's so much misinformation. There's so much, you know, contradicting information. And I feel like as a professional in the space, it can be very difficult to educate people and almost educate people out of these, you know, mindsets they have one way or the other in the space of nutrition. So what initially made you passionate about going into this as a career?
Yeah, I totally agree. It's like we're not only just providing pure education, but we also have to like dispel all these myths. And it feels like we're kind of working against some information online too. So it's a lot.
Totally. Sure.
So I was someone who kind of, I guess, going into college, I really had no idea what I wanted to do. I knew I liked science. I kind of was like, maybe I'll just be like a general biology major, you know, as people do. But I'm like, what am I going to do? Like pre-med or nursing? Or I didn't even know like dietetics was like a career at that point. And then my sister suggested it. She was like, you should do nutrition. And I was like, maybe. And then I enrolled in just like a nutrition 101 course. And I had like a really great professor, that I really loved. And ever since that course, I was like, yes, this is what I want to do. And then I didn't really get clear on prenatal nutrition until I was kind of going throughout my dietetics program. And then again, we kind of covered the whole pregnancy prenatal error. And I really, really loved it and was instantly like, I could see myself doing this. This feels like a really good fit. And then to graduate, you know, you have to do like a thesis or a capstone project or whatever. I did it on pregnancy, like a pregnancy topic. So I ended up kind of digging into more of the research around prenatal nutrition. It was actually about caffeine in pregnancy, is definitely a hot topic.
Yeah.
So I did that in school, and then I ended up working at a women's clinic, you know, after I graduated for a couple of years, which kind of led me to want to start my own business in this space. I really wanted to have my own private practice. I had no idea what that would look like, but it was a very easy transition to kind of niching down to this population because I had already had the experience, and you know, I knew the passion was already there. And working in the clinic, I just felt like people really wanted this information, but it wasn't readily available. People weren't getting it at their doctor's office. So they were turning to, you know, the internet and now social media more than ever. So that's when I really started showing up on social media and kind of immediately jumping into like myth busting on social media. And it caught on really quickly because so many people were already looking for information there.
Yeah. And if you guys don't know, she is the prenatal nutritionist on Instagram, which is super easy to find too. Great handle. Interrupting really quickly just to talk about Element. Now, this is a question I get asked a lot. Is Element safe during pregnancy or even breastfeeding? And the answer is yes. You can take Element, this electrolyte hydration, in order to maintain a healthy pregnancy through pregnancy and beyond. And especially, I have so many friends now that use Element during labor, because we know that labor is actually getting our uterus to contract and we need a lot of energy as we're going through this long labor process, right? So this is something that I am going to be using. I already have Dom, like, it's on the list of things that we need to bring and have in our to-go bag is Element and a big water bottle, so that I know that I'm keeping hydrated and I'm keeping my muscles healthy, especially my uterus. It is a muscle that's going to help. So this is so key and important. It is safe to have Element throughout your pregnancy. It is especially great during labor and while you're breastfeeding and getting so many nutrients out. So this is just going to help and support your body. If you haven't checked out Element, please go to the link below. We'll have it in the show notes. It is just drinkelement.com/optimal. And with every purchase, you get a free sample package. That's really incredible, because then you get to sample different flavors and see what really works best for you and your body. And this just keeps you drinking more water also throughout the day, which we know is essential in pregnancy and beyond. So please check that link below and get a free sample package. But you do a really great job of quick, easy, you know, here's what can help during first, second, third trimester. Here's what is not true. Here's what's true. Here's what nutrients are good. Here's how you can get them. Like, there's so much information on your page, which has been super helpful. And a girlfriend of mine, when she was pregnant, actually recommended your page. That's how I knew about you before got pregnant. And, you know, I think having this kind of support and education really helps to empower the mom to feel like, okay, I'm doing the best, not only for me, but for my baby. And there's a lot of, you should do this, you shouldn't do this. And like, even going to caffeine, I'm really interested in hearing, you know, how that turned out and what you learned through that experience. Because again, like, if we could just go and kind of tear down some of the myths as we go along here, I think that will help a ton. So can we start with caffeine? Like, what is appropriate? Yeah. What can you have? What can you not have? What do you suggest too?
Yeah. So this one is super interesting because it's one of the topics that we have the most research and data on, because it is so popular worldwide. I mean, in every country, there is a caffeine addiction, you know, everybody has to have their coffee. And so we have a lot of research on it, which is like good and bad, because most of the studies, I mean, we have a lot, but most of the studies still can't prove causation of anything, right? So we still can't say that drinking, you know, X amount of cups of coffee causes X outcome during pregnancy, which, I mean, that's how most nutrition science and data is. It's mostly like observational, and we're just like, oh, we can kind of conclude this, but we can't really make a definitive statement about it. So for basically every study that says there's some sort of association, there's another study that contradicts it and that says there's no association. So it's really confusing. It is. I will say that people that are confused and are getting mixed messages, they are right. There are a lot of mixed messages out there because the research is so mixed on this topic. Their recommendations from ACOG and the World Health Organization are like 200 to 300 milligrams of caffeine. That's like, okay, right? Mm-hmm. There was some data that somewhat recently came out. I think it was last year. That was like this big headline, like, should we be questioning this safety net of 200 to 300 milligrams of caffeine. We should be like recommending complete avoidance. So I was like, I need to go back and dig in to the research, because that thesis that I was talking about, that was in 2016. So that was like 5 years ago. Seems like forever ago. Seems like longer than that. So for even these past 5 years, there has been a good amount of research that's come out that's like new. So I'm like, oh my gosh, I need to go dive into this like a little bit more. So I did, and it is still true that like excessive high amounts of caffeine, can lead to adverse pregnancy outcomes. There's like links to low birth weight, links to like preterm delivery. There's some speculations about potential miscarriage with high amounts of caffeine. So there are some like really scary terms to throw out with excessive high amounts. And then the question is like, oh, Ryan, what is a high amount? That's always what I get, right? What's a high amount? What's an excessive amount? And that's where another issue lies. The studies are all different. You know, some studies will say 7 cups plus, and it's like, okay, well, who's drinking 7 cups?
Yeah, seriously.
If you're on that full pot of coffee binge every day.
Yeah, that's what I was talking to someone. I was like, I guess people that maybe just sit at their office and like keep pouring from like the pot, maybe get up to 7 cups. But right, if you're like really cognizant about it, I don't think you're going to go to that extreme. So we do have like some pretty conclusive data, in like animal models that the human equivalent to 7 cups per day can cause low birth weight. But again, who's drinking 7 cups? There's some other studies that suggest like 10 cups a day, but then we also have studies that say 3 cups a day can even, you know, start to potentially have these effects. So I do think, you know, it is something to consider, lowering your caffeine intake, trying to figure out like, where is my caffeine coming from? If you're not a coffee drinker, you're probably in the clear. Like if you're someone who just likes, you know, tea, maybe the occasional tea and like some chocolate, you're probably okay. If you are a regular coffee drinker, then, you know, maybe considering swapping some to tea, swapping some to decaf, swapping to half calf. There are a lot of, you know, ways you can switch out your morning cup for another morning warm beverage. You know, we're all in that habit of wanting to wake up and have something in our cup. So I think there are definitely ways that you can still get that and do that habit while lowering the amount of caffeine. There are some instances where it might be more beneficial to do a complete avoidance. Like if you have a high risk pregnancy, you know, if you're someone who's already sensitive to caffeine, these types of things are all things to consider. Generally, I think that like you're pretty safe with 1 cup a day if that's something that, you know, really boosts your mood. There are a ton of people that I get questions about that are like, I have like caffeine headaches. Like I legit get migraines when I don't have the caffeine, which is also a problem, right? Because if you have a migraine, you can't like function throughout your day. So I don't know. I mean, that's like a case where you want to talk to your provider, like come up with a plan, come up with a solution there. So it can be something that you really want to, you know, work with your personal care team and decide what's best. But I think in general, all this being said, in conclusion, I think it's generally okay to have, you know, a small amount of caffeine per day, but keeping it under, you know, that kind of 200 milligram parameter. Yeah.
And I was going to ask about that. I mean, you said 1 cup a day, you know, you can fairly confidently say is safe, but I think you said like the 250 to 300 milligram range, like in average cups of coffee, is that 1-2 cups?
Yeah, it varies widely. I mean, you know, per like what coffee you're getting, if you're going out to get coffee, generally I kind of consider 1 cup 100 milligrams, somewhere around that. It depends, right? Like, are you doing like a double shot, triple shot latte? Yeah, like a right. You know what I mean? It can get kind of variable. Cold brew, you know, that's going to be a bit more caffeine. Then you're kind of looking more upwards of the 200 milligrams. Tea, like I know people are kind of obsessed with like matcha right now. I see it all over social media. Matcha is higher in caffeine than normal green tea, it's still going to, you're still going to be under like 100 milligrams. So I think that is, it could be a good swap, or you know, if you'd like it, you can probably safely have a cup of matcha a day.
I tried matcha because I actually gave up caffeine actually after my miscarriage. I just felt like I wanted to cut any stimulants out of my body. And I tried matcha. I've tried it twice now. Anyone can convince me, but it's not working for me. I am not a matcha girl. So then I tried like golden lattes in the morning with just like turmeric. And that was good for like a minute. But then I was like, you know, this is not coffee. So now I just have water and I'm honestly fine. And that's what works for me.
That's amazing. I'm not a matcha person either. I keep trying it too. And I'm like, everyone loves it and is obsessed with it. What is wrong with me?
I feel like everyone I've heard who's obsessed with it is just like, well, you just have to put this whole coconut cream and then this amount of honey and then this amount of, and then I'm like, at what point does it not become a matcha drink anymore as much as like a coconut milk honey latte, you know? But hey.
I know.
So, and I know that when we talk about caffeine, like there's so many different ways you can get caffeine, which you mentioned. Is there anything in the research that you come across on like people who might drink an energy drink consistently versus coffee? Because I know, again, thousands and thousands of places that we can get our caffeine that have so much else in it that is coming along with that caffeine versus a black cup of coffee.
Yeah, that's a good question. And there is data out there on like soda intake, because soda also has some caffeine in it. And some studies distinguish between where the caffeine is coming from. And some are kind of just like all caffeine intake, like have people document it, which is flawed in itself, right? If we're like self-documenting, we're all wrong. We're always all wrong. So soda, what's interesting about soda intake is a lot of researchers note that just overall sugar intake, like the sugar from the soda, could potentially be more detrimental than the actual caffeine in the soda, which is really interesting.
Well, on sugar, like how much do we get to play with that during pregnancy? Because, you know, especially if you have cravings, if you just like, well, I'm pregnant, so I just want the ice cream or I just want the cake. Like, how much can we safely lean into some of these cravings or enjoy ourselves without having the guilt?
Yeah, absolutely. I love this question. And I am all about all foods can fit, you know, whatever you love. I don't want you to ever feel like you have to cut out your favorite foods by any means. I do think, you know, we can fit in our favorite sweet treats and, you know, extra little things that we really enjoy. And that also may like boost our mood and make us feel better and happier. These things can all fit. And I do get questions specifically about soda too, because people are like, oh, I'm really like craving a Coke. Like, is this safe? And it's not anything that's going to cause direct harm to the baby or anything like that. And I kind of look at soda as any other sweet treat, you know, it can definitely fit into your day, you know, as long as you're looking at the rest of your intake and kind of considering like, where are the sugars in your diet coming from? Like, is there anything else that you're consuming on a regular basis that is a little bit higher in sugar? And then you're kind of working that into your day, because really our diet, we have to look at it as a whole over individual food choices. It is for anyone, right? It's about our total consumption as opposed to these individual food choices. So I am a huge proponent of leaning into your cravings. There is a difference between constantly craving sweet foods and feeling sort of like this out of control feeling, those sweet cravings kind of going like well into the second trimester, because sometimes it's mainly experienced in the first trimester when people mostly crave carbs in general in the first trimester. And that's very normal. That's super normal. I mean, most people go through some sort of period where they're like, all they want is carbs, or that's all that's staying down, that's all they can eat. But I will say there's, you know, a decent amount of people who reach out to me that those sweet cravings seem to be lingering and to be hanging around some. So in that case, we might want to look at your overall intake, you know, kind of looking at what is making up your plate. There might be a macronutrient, you know, imbalance, and that's kind of maybe causing these additional sweet cravings. But in general, leaning into cravings, I think, is an okay route to go during pregnancy. Our bodies are really smart. And this is just with cravings in general, right? Not just sweet cravings, but if you're craving like a very specific food, like burgers, or I mean, some people will crave sushi. There's so many things that your body will tell you if you just listen to it. And I think that's a great lesson in pregnancy too. I'm a big proponent of this in general, like intuitive eating and just listening to what your body has to say. And I think pregnancy can be a great time to kind of practice this skill.
Yeah, I did have a different question I was going to go with, but you brought up sushi. And I think that brings us to a whole nother, you know, bag of potential myths on all these random foods that you get told coming in, like, don't eat this, like, don't eat deli meats, don't eat sushi, don't eat, what are some other ones? Bacon, don't eat pineapple.
Cheese.
Yes, cheese. Like, so do any of these have merit, and where do these myths originally even come from, and what is there out there that, you know, people who are thinking about becoming pregnant or are currently pregnant should actually be avoiding?
Yeah, most of these are pretty outdated. And it's not that we should like throw them out the window in general. I think it just warrants a bit of education on why these have even been put on these lists, these avoid lists in general. I think that a lot of OB clinics are still kind of giving out handouts that they made like 20 years ago and are just kind of like rolling with it. And they're like, these are still relevant, right? So yeah, sushi, we can start there, even though that's kind of like a big one. I like to have like kind of a conversation around fish in general, because I think that there's a lot of misconception about eating fish in general during pregnancy. I often see people just kind of throwing fish, you know, fish intake off the menu completely, because they're like, well, there's a risk of, you know, bacteria growth. There's a risk of getting like sick from that. There's also the risk of mercury. But the research actually shows that not eating fish in pregnancy can be detrimental. So having that mindset can essentially lead to lower nutrient intake, because fish is such a good source of so many nutrients, and so many nutrients that are needed in higher amounts during pregnancy. For example, fish is one of the few food sources of vitamin D, and vitamin D, so many of us are deficient in vitamin D, which extends into pregnancy. So many of us are not getting enough vitamin D in pregnancy, which is a really important nutrient throughout. I recommend fish intake in any capacity that you can handle it during pregnancy. I know that fish is like pretty gross, especially if you have food aversions and nausea. It's not something you're like picking as your first choice by any means. But hopefully once you get into the second and third trimesters, those kind of symptoms go away. And so you're able to include fish again. So I absolutely recommend including several servings of low mercury fish per week, if you're not allergic, of course, and it stays down and it feels good to you. Sushi, there are a ton of options. There's so many options nowadays. There's plenty of like fully cooked rolls at sushi restaurants. There's plenty of like veggie rolls. I don't know. They're so creative nowadays, honestly. So when we're thinking about sushi and we're thinking about foods that cause foodborne illness outbreaks in general, it's not secluded to just these foods that we often see on these lists, right? We think when we see this list, we think like the only foods that can carry listeria are soft cheeses, deli meats, and, you know, fish. We're like, that's it. When in reality, any food can carry any sort of germ that causes a foodborne illness outbreak. So with sushi specifically, we can really honestly get sick from any piece of that sushi roll. Like we can potentially get sick from the rice sitting out too long. You know, they might just leave it out on the counter and you might get sick. There is produce in sushi rolls, which produce causes the most foodborne illness outbreaks collectively than any other food.
Wow.
So a lot of sushi rolls have cucumbers in them. a lot of sushi rolls have like lemon slices or sprouts or avocado, all sorts of different things. So you can just as equally get sick from that like cucumber that's in your sushi roll than you can from the fish that's in there. And I think that's something that people don't realize, is that it's not only the fish that is a concern, or not, you know, is the main culprit, I guess I should say. It's these other parts that can potentially cause you to get sick too. So the bottom line with sushi, you want to make sure that you're going to a quality restaurant, which is probably going to cost more. You know, fancy sushi costs a decent amount. Mercury, we do still want to watch out for the highest mercury fish and avoid those. And then with raw fish options, we always want to eat cooked shellfish. That is like one of the things that I do recommend looking out for, is raw shellfish. So avoiding any raw shellfish, because that one is commonly on the CDC foodborne illness outbreak list. We see raw shellfish on there a lot. So those are like the three main points that I like to make.
Yeah, I think that's really important to just kind of start to open our mindset around. I had heard about the produce before and I was so shocked, and actually learning that in other countries, that's the thing that they have, you know, avoid right. salads and avoid, you know, exactly. that kind of thing.
Or the pre-produced veggie trays, because yeah. like you said, it's just the yeah. thing that has been sitting there for a couple of weeks that people may not think right. they need to wash, that has gathered some sort of bacteria or some sort of, you know, thing that might cause that foodborne illness.
Yes, the veggie trays. It's always the veggie and fruit trays. Those are always on there.
And is there any fruit? Because I know fruit kind of pops up sometimes in like weird ways of like things that you should avoid, like grapes or pineapple. Like, oh, yeah. is there fruit that we really should be avoiding during pregnancy?
Yeah, I know. It's so interesting. And not really. There isn't really any fruit that you have to avoid. The pineapple one, definitely a myth. The grape one, definitely a myth. There is some interesting data on papaya, like unripe papaya, the green kind of papaya, which, I mean, kind of warrants you to not eat like high amounts of it. But I don't think that most people eat green unripe papaya anyways.
Yeah.
It can be in like some of those salads. I think it's a Thai salad. Don't quote me on that. I could be totally off, but it is like a salad that uses it. But even if you were to like to eat one of those salads, that's not even a concern. You're eating such a small amount.
Yeah. I've seen that used in like different slaw type preparations, or kind of like you're saying, salads. But again, especially in, I feel like, your general American based diet, you're not going to see unripe papaya showing up a ton. Kind of moving away from, I guess this is going to kind of be another myth of sorts, but I think it'll help us parlay into a discussion more about nutrition itself. The whole concept of eating for two. And I like on your Instagram profile, at the very top, you have a line that says nourishment for two. And so it seems like a small difference, eating for two versus nourishment for two, but can you speak a little bit more into that and why eating for two might not be a great mentality to go in with?
Yes, absolutely. I think this is a myth that I've been busting ever since I started in this field 5 years ago. And I feel like I'm a part of the reason why I don't hear it as much anymore. But that could also just be because I'm so in this world. And a lot of my colleagues, you know, they don't talk about eating for two or anything like that. But anyways, so yeah, our needs do increase for several nutrients, but they don't double for anything, especially not your calorie needs. The baby is so, so tiny. You know, if you're tracking it on those, what week am I and how big is the baby at this time? You know, the baby starts like so small, and then they get to like a blueberry and, you know, an avocado. And like, you know, they're so tiny. So yes, nutrition is incredibly important, and you do need to pay attention to make sure you're getting certain nutrients. But there would be absolutely no reason that you would need to eat double of anything. And this kind of goes into like the calorie intake conversation a little bit, which is largely dependent on each individual. something you'll see out on the internet a lot is like these blanket recommendations to increase by, you know, 300 calories in the second trimester and then increase by 400 calories in the third trimester. And honestly, I hate these so much because it's like, what? Like, how is that across the board? Like, there's no way that makes sense for everyone across the board. Yet so many people will come to me and be like, okay, so I need to eat this much more. And I'm like, well, honestly, maybe I would have to have you as a one-on-one client so we can really dive in and talk about your needs and talk about where you're getting these certain nutrients and everything like that. So yes, you could need to eat more calories, you know, throughout pregnancy. But there might be some individuals that you don't need to eat any more calories until like the third trimester. You know, it really depends so largely on the person. And yes, nourishment for two is what I say instead of eating for two, because I do feel like there is a difference here. Nourishment for two, I think there's just more intention behind it is how I like to frame it, is you're just intentionally focusing on certain foods that are high in the nutrients that are needed the most during pregnancy. So that's how I like to frame it. No more eating for two, just nourishment for two, and making sure that you're doing the best that you can.
I love that. And let's flip from going what we're supposed to avoid. And can we lean into a little bit of what would be good to add in, especially if we're thinking of getting pregnant? Like, are there nutrients that are really crucial to be adding in beyond our vitamin or prenatal?
Yeah, definitely. There's so many nutrients that are necessary. Where do I want to start? So I talk a lot about choline on my on my page. And I like to overemphasize this one because I think the most talked about ones, the most ones that people automatically think of are like folate and iron, which are both also incredibly important. But choline is this kind of like, air quotes, like new nutrient as far as it relates to like kind of like when it was discovered and how nobody really talks about it. Except for now it's getting a little bit more because there's more research coming out on it like every single day. So choline is equally as important to folate, especially if you are trying to conceive and in the like early first moments of pregnancy. We know folate as the nutrient that helps with forming the baby's spine, the neural tube, and really those early weeks. And choline really has a very similar role. So it is equally as important during those early moments. So you want to think about both of these nutrients, folate, choline, two nutrients I definitely work on including more of if you're trying to conceive. And choline is also not one that is found in a lot of prenatal vitamins. There's more coming to the market nowadays since the more research is coming out. But just kind of when you're looking at across the board prenatal supplements, not many of them include choline. So that's why really important to focus on food sources of choline, which best one there is, and the most common one is eggs, and specifically egg yolks. So don't throw out the yolk. Mm-hmm. Most of the nutrients are in the yolk, which people don't realize either. Mm. If you throw out the yolk, you're missing like you're missing why you would eat eggs in the beginning, you know, to begin with.
Mm-hmm. So in that case, if we're talking specifically about choline and there's somebody who, for one reason or another, has different food, I guess I don't want to say restrictions, but preferences, like if they are vegetarian or vegan, or for some reason can't eat eggs, if that's a big aversion in early pregnancy, where else can they get choline from food sources?
Yeah, it's interesting because it's either like, I feel like it's 50-50. Like some people are like, the only thing I could eat was eggs. Yeah. And some people are like, my only food aversion was eggs.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting. But yeah, I think there are, so if you're not allergic to eggs, and you're just, you were like, cannot stand them, I would try to like blend them in to dishes where you can't actually taste the eggs. There's a lot of like stir fries you can do, or like casseroles and things to kind of like disguise the eggs a bit. Or you can do like put them in like pancakes or muffins or something like that to try to work them in. There are definitely other sources of choline. mainly fish and meat. So if you are allergic to eggs, but you can eat fish and meat and chicken and things like that, you'll probably be okay. If you are vegetarian and you don't eat meat, then you're going to struggle a little bit, and you're most likely going to want to find a supplement that contains choline, because you are going to have a really hard time meeting those choline needs. There are, you know, it is found in some plant foods, but overall, plant foods are generally a poor source of choline. I forget the exact comparison, but like broccoli and Brussels sprouts have some choline, but you'd have to eat like 13 cups a day to meet that 450 milligram per day RDA that's set at the moment.
And what about, you know, folate? What food sources really come from folate? Like what, I guess I'm asking too, like what in our diet on a day-to-day basis, or maybe in different trimesters, are there different key nutrients that we should be thinking about that come from different foods?
Kind of. Yeah, I get this question a good amount. Like, is there specific nutrients trimester to trimester that are like more important? And a little bit, there's some that, you know, we kind of want to emphasize during certain periods, but in general, most of the nutrients that are important during pregnancy are important throughout your entire pregnancy. For example, like I'm talking about folate and choline that are important during the early weeks, even when you're trying to conceive, because they are so involved in that forming that neural tube, which actually closes really early on in pregnancy. So yes, those are super important in the early months, but they still remain important throughout your pregnancy. The one new study on choline was actually done in the third trimester. So it kind of looked at third trimester choline intake specifically, and it actually found that 930 milligrams per day was the most optimal. Now, like I said, the RDA is set at 450, but this research showed that 930 milligrams in the third trimester had the most optimal outcomes. So that just shows like it's still like choline is still important throughout your pregnancy. We just want to make sure we're focusing on it in the first trimester as well. And I guess the other one I'll say is DHA, like omega-3s and DHA are very rapidly involved in developing baby's brain at the end of pregnancy. So in the third trimester is kind of when it's very rapidly accumulated in the baby's brain in the third trimester near the end. So if you can up your intake of fish, maybe consider, if you don't like fish, definitely consider, you know, a fish oil supplement, some sort of DHA supplement there. So that one's super important in the later stages of pregnancy. But in general, we want to consider them all. I know this is like, people are like, ah, now I have to worry about them all the time. but yeah, we generally want to work on them all.
There is, you know, some stuff around organs that I've been seeing a little bit more about organ consumption, especially as either like a capsule that you take or a new prenatal that people are taking. But then there's a lot of fear also with, you know, how much vitamin A can come from some of those organ sources. So what is your, what is the research kind of saying? What do you kind of lean in toward? I know people probably aren't out there readily available for liver or excited to go get liver, but what is the research kind of saying on these things?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of misconception, conceptions about liver and organ meat intake. And the main blanket recommendation that you'll see is like, definitely avoid liver and organ meats during pregnancy. They have too much vitamin A. You're going to like cause a vitamin A toxicity if you eat any sort of liver at all, which is not true by any means. Oh my gosh, this is just, people get so confused. So the type of vitamin A that can cause a toxicity is retinol. So like the active form of vitamin A. We really only see this toxicity happen when people are supplementing with too much retinol. So they're supplementing with this active form of vitamin A. That's when we really see the toxicity happen. And that is true. That can happen in pregnancy and it can cause, you know, adverse effects. But this, most people aren't supplementing with vitamin A and they're definitely not supplementing with retinol. So it's just not very common. It just doesn't really happen. If you were to see a vitamin A toxicity with organ meat intake and liver intake, you would have to be eating so much organ meat. Mm. And I barely know anyone who eats liver. And I don't know anyone who eats that much liver, you know, that they would cause that to happen. And liver is actually one of the best foods you can eat during pregnancy. It's high in, I mean, talk about meeting your nutrient needs. If you consume even like the smallest amount of liver, you're going to get like, I mean, so much closer to meeting so many of the nutrients that are needed in higher amounts during pregnancy. For example, I have another dietitian on my team who helps with our content and our app and everything. And she is currently pregnant. And she has been regularly eating liver throughout her pregnancy. This is her second pregnancy. Her first pregnancy, she struggled with anemia and like her iron leveled her entire pregnancy. Mm. So this time around, she like made it a point to regularly consume liver throughout her pregnancy. And she's now like, I think 31 or 32 weeks pregnant. And her iron levels have been amazing throughout her entire pregnancy. Mm. She hasn't been supplementing at all. She's just been including liver regularly in her diet. And so she went to her doctor's appointment and her doctor was like, oh my gosh, like this is so rare. She was telling her like, this is so rare to see someone this far along in pregnancy have this good, you know, iron parameters. And she's like, what are you doing? And she's like, I've been including liver like regularly in my diet. And her doctor is also pregnant and is struggling with her iron levels. And so her doctor is like, all right, I'm going to get liver. Like, it was just crazy. It's crazy.
You know, you're doing something right when you walk out of the doctor's office and they take your recommendation.
100%. Yes.
I tried. Dom made the burger with.
Oh, so we get this burger from a company that they mix 75% ground bison with 25% of ground heart and ground liver. And I've been trying to work that in a way. I'll make burgers and Jen's like, ooh, you made burgers. And I'm tempted not to tell her that it's a liver burger to just see if she can tell. But yeah, she's been sticking with the liver supplements because
I tried it and I just felt like I could still taste it and I couldn't do it.
It's all in your mind.
That's true. No, that's totally true though, because I previously went to Italy and they have like a decent amount of liver dishes there. And I had no idea I was eating liver. And I thought it was like so delicious. I was like, this is so good. Wow. And then someone told me it was liver and I was like, I don't know if I like it anymore.
I don't know if I like this anymore. I know. I'm still looking for that preparation on how I can make it in home and sneak it by Jen's sensitive nose and taste buds. But
yeah, I haven't done it yet.
Maybe we'll get there in the second pregnancy.
I know. That's funny.
So between, like, we've been talking a lot about nutrition during pregnancy, and I just want to touch quick on, because of course for a lot of people it becomes, you know, very important as soon as they become pregnant, but prenatal nutrition can be just as important. So like if somebody is out there considering, you know, trying to conceive and start their pregnancy journey, how far ahead of time should people start to change any sort of, or start taking a prenatal vitamin or anything like that? Like what's the time frame when someone should think about starting?
Now. I love talking about the preconception period because I do think it is as equally as important as, you know, nutrition during pregnancy. And so many people are like, okay, I'm pregnant now. Now I want to like start making all these healthy changes, which is great. I mean, it's never too late, right? To make like healthy changes and start working on including more vegetables and, you know, all these things. But I think people also don't realize that it can be just a challenge to eat anything during pregnancy. You know, the range of nauseas can be like, I don't experience it at all to super severe. So there's a wide range there. But I think a lot of people don't realize how challenging it is to actually eat during pregnancy. So that's why I like to talk about preconception so much, is that you can really work on preparing your body to make sure it is, you know, you find the optimal health for you, so that your body is like, okay, I know what I'm doing. You know, your body's really amazing and really has the blueprint of what to do and like how to grow this baby. So it's going to work really hard and do everything it possibly can to make sure the baby is getting everything they need to hit these, you know, growth and development milestones. Granted, you were very well nourished, you know, before pregnancy. So I forgot your question. I just get very excited. Oh yeah, now, definitely start now. it's never too late or too early to start, you know, making healthy lifestyle changes. As far as supplements go, I think that, I mean, generally you'll see kind of like a blanket recommendation, start 3 months before. And that's great too. If you can start earlier, even better. I know that a lot of people, I mean, it's kind of 50-50, right? Of people who are planning their pregnancies and people who are just kind of finding out they're pregnant, surprise. But if you are someone who is planning and maybe you're like me and you're like, okay, 2020, whatever, we're going to start trying. if you're like that, then now is a great time. I think that it can be challenging to figure out health-wise. I mean, this goes for exercise and mental health and literally everything. I think it can take time to figure out what works for you. Because again, getting back to like information overwhelm, and there's so many people online telling us so many different things and, you know, we should follow this diet and we should do this exercise regimen and like all of these things. But in reality, you have to find something that's going to work for you, fit within your lifestyle, make you feel good. And that can take some time. So I think the earlier you can start doing those things and investing in yourself and, you know, just finding things that make you feel good, the better.
Yeah, that's so incredibly important. And just something to start to be aware and conscious of. And I know you have, you know, your the Feel Good Pregnancy Cookbook, as well as your prenatal nutrition library, to really help people kind of dice through the information even more and really get examples of what they can eat without having to think about things or really, you know, try to Google all these things, you know? So where can people go find all of these resources from you?
Yeah, so I do. I have the Feel Good Pregnancy Cookbook is available on Amazon. And with that, the goal of that was to make the recipes very simple and to have ingredients that everybody can have access to. There's no crazy ingredients that are, you know, wild foods you would only find at health food store and things like that. So that's meant to be very simple, very easy and straightforward, and also recipes that still taste good, you know. And then the Prenatal Nutrition Library is our app. So that's actually available in any app store. You can download it for free on the Apple app or Google Play Store. Most of the content is for paid members, but there is a good amount that's free as well. So you can kind of go in, get a sneak peek and check it out. It is meant to be the replacement for Google. So yes, so you don't have to waste time on Google anymore. Honestly, leaving feeling more confused, you will get very clear answers from the first search with the library, just so we make sure that you know, what you're eating is not only safe, but also nutritious and the most optimal things that you can be eating. And we also have meal plans on there too. I should mention that. If you want to basically completely take the guesswork out of everything, we have meal plans, like trimester by trimester meal plans, that will kind of give you like a list of certain foods to focus on. And then we actually incorporate those foods into the meal plans that we have as well.
Amazing. Yeah. So helpful.
That's incredible. Thanks so much for coming on and giving your time to help us kind of chop through all this information on the cutting board, in the store, in the grocery store, on the internet, and just, you know, the whirlwind that is nutrition in life, especially during a time like pregnancy. We appreciate your time. We're definitely going to continue to follow during this for the rest of this pregnancy and any future ones. I'd love to get a hand on your book and try some of the recipes out in our kitchen.
Yes.
And hope people out there check it out.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me. It was fun chatting.
Thanks for joining us for another interview. Such incredible information on nutrition pre-pregnancy and during pregnancy, and really just nutrition information in general. Go check out all of Ryan's information because she has such fantastic stuff on all of her platforms. And of course, remember, it's holiday season and we're all getting ready to move into the new year. So join us for the Full Body Mobility Challenge. It's a Gen Health community challenge only for Gen Health members. You can find the link down in the show notes. Join up. We are all starting on January 1st to get moving into the new year. And of course, we will see you next time on the next episode of the Optimal Body Podcast.